You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off. All right, everybody. If there's one thing that I have learned in the first 1,000 episodes of the Nine Finger Chronicles is that I am absolutely horrible still in organization and trying to get my life together. Like, it's just fucking boo some days. I feel like a cartoon rocket ship just getting sent into space. That's what my life feels like, Jack.
I hear you all the time, man. It's nonstop. Yeah.
Nonstop. All right. Today on the podcast from Michigan for a good old fashioned BS session, we have Jack Ruthruff. You've been on the podcast before, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's been a few years, but yeah.
Yeah. Dude, this is episode 1001.
Oh boy. I gotta,
we just keep moving forward, dude. We celebrate it and then we just keep moving forward.
I got a lot to stand up for, step up for, to be 1001.
Yep. So, you know, everybody's like, every time like a big NFL team wins a championship, they're like, it's the next year everybody really pays attention to them, right? So this has to be, Jack, this has to be the best podcast I ever put out.
No, no pressure.
No pressure. All right. So on today's episode, good old fashioned BS session. Why don't we start it off here with where do you live and what do you do for a living?
I'm in mid Michigan, about 2 hours north of Detroit, in the Saginaw Bay area, big time walleye area, pretty decent whitetails if you can get in the right pockets. And I work in supply chain for a plastics manufacturer.
Okay. So when you say supply chain, you're in charge of like the logistics of getting material, purchasing all the raw materials. All that stuff. Okay. Yeah. My uncle does something like that down in Kansas, and he's been doing that for a long time. What do you guys manufacture?
We manufacture Ziploc bags.
That's right. Now I remember. Like the originally the branded
Ziploc bags.
Ziploc bags. All right, dude. So at your house, do you get an employee discount or are you allowed to take like boxes of Ziploc bags off the shelf every day?
We have a company store for employees only and their family members. So
that... So my uncle used to work at Nestle's. All right. They're the candy guy. So in for Christmases, like me and, so all his nephews and his, we all used to get bags of candy. Cause when he worked there, do you ever give people Ziploc bags as presents?
Care
packages. I just envisioned today is actually my youngest son's 8th birthday today. And I just had this vision pop in my head of him opening up a present and it was just a box of Ziploc bags.
Around the holidays, we throw care packages together. We can get at the company store and it works out ideal. Because we do also own some cleaning product companies out there. So we kind of throw some care packages together. And that's a lot of times usually what the family is actually looking forward to about as much as anything.
Oh yeah, dude, I love it when you don't have to spend your own money on everyday essentials, right? So I don't know, like, you know, I used to back in the day, my mom, when I was younger, would give me a pack of socks and a pack of underwear for Christmas or for my birthday every time. And so I need that. No one does that for a 44-year-old, 45-year-old guy anymore. Right. No one buys me socks or underwear except me now. I just kind of wish someone would buy me socks and underwear.
Right, right. Like, or if somebody showed up at your house with like 400-gallon freezer Ziploc bags right before hunting season, you'd be like,
exactly.
Oh, it's gonna be great.
Exactly. Or, you know, God forbid, one of my relatives worked at a refrigerator manufacturer or a deep freeze manufacturer. It's like, oh, here's a deep freeze. I could use a deep freeze right now. I could use a deep freeze right now.
Yeah, well, congratulations to your son on his first year, too.
Oh, dude. I'm pretty excited.
I bet.
I'm pretty excited. Awesome. I want to talk to you about that, though, real quick. I was taken off guard, and obviously it's not me.
Right.
Right. When my daughter shot her turkeys, I was hyped. Like, she was hyped. I was hyped. My son has a little bit different. He has a different personality, obviously. Everybody gets excited in their own way. I thought he was going to be a little bit more like externally excited about the whole situation. And I was kind of taken off guard by it, where it then affected he pulled the trigger, he shot the doe. I couldn't see it because we were twisted up on the ground. He was facing one direction, I was facing another. He shot it, and then it ran, and he watched it jump a log and then not get back up.
Okay.
And I didn't see that, right? And I'm like, so the first thing I did was take the gun out of it. Out of his hand. I set it against a tree. I gave him, like, we dabbed up, like, high five, hug. And I was like, dude, hey, congratulations, dude. You just shot your first deer. Do you think it was a good shot? He's like, yeah, I hit it right in the shoulder. And then I could see, like, there was a moment where he was really excited. And then it fleeted fairly quickly. And I was like, what's that mean? And in my head, I started to, like, probably overanalyze it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I was just like, I thought for somebody's first deer who talks about going hunting a lot, his excitement level would have been different than what it was.
Right.
And then we followed the blood trail and we got to the doe, and still he was very stoic in his, expression after everything that happened. He was very interested and he held a leg and got real close when we were gutting the deer, but field dressing it. But outside of that, you know, he made the phone calls to the grandparents and even one of his buddies. And even after that, I was like, and then before we started recording, you mentioned that one of your kids killed a deer. What was their reaction like the first deer that they killed?
That was last year. So he would have been 7 and it was late season.
Yeah.
And first day of his Christmas break, actually, it took him out. Mm. And kind of similar. He was really excited, but nervous at the same time, obviously. Yeah. It took me about a minute and a half. I think I pulled him off of it 2 or 3 times just because shot angle and whatnot. He wounded a doe early season with a rifle. He hit it low in the brisket, a little further than we had anticipated. And so I wanted to make sure this one was successful. And then he squeezed the trigger and he thought he missed. And I'm recording it on my phone as I'm watching it over the shoulder and saw that he'd smoked it. And then we kind of, you know, he did give me a hug, all the excitement. And then I went down to check for blood and everything. I thought it looked good. So I said, hey, stay here. I'm going to go check on it. And in the meantime, he did grab his tablet, which I, because I let him take his tablet out there to kind of keep quiet and still while we were waiting. And he recorded, and he didn't even remember doing it until we come across his, we were looking at pictures and stuff on his tablet. And all of a sudden, I can't find this video of him all, he was excited and kind of whispering. And his excitement seemed to almost be a little bit of a roller coaster, a little bit of that stoic, but then it kind of, it would go up and down as we were tracking and whatnot. Then he got up to it and he got more excited. And then after that, then it was like, oh, we got to call everybody. We got to call grandma. We got to call aunts and uncles and everybody. So,
yeah,
it was kind of a roller coaster, that stoic and excitement at the same time.
Yeah, it was weird. It was almost like this was the 1,000th deer that he's killed.
Right.
You know, like he was happy, but he wasn't like, I don't know. I felt like, I don't know. And it's not me. It's like, that's him. And that's the difference. Like I get jacked up when I kill a deer. He didn't. And I was like, does he like it? Did I do something wrong? I mean, I literally had to tell him to sit still 32,000 times yesterday. And so, and so then the deer came in behind us. And then this is funny at home. My daughter was also hunting on the same farm. All right.
Okay.
But she was sitting with grandpa and a horse came in, and the horse came into the area that they were in and didn't leave. So my stepdad got up and he was throwing rocks at this horse to try to get it to go away. And she heard the shot and she's like, oh, cool. I hope I get one too. Then the horse came in and it ruined her night. Right. Well, now she's a little like pissed that she didn't get an opportunity. And this is her second year going. And this was my son's first hunt ever.
Right.
Like first hunt ever. And so she was a little pissed. And then my son, he got arrogant and he's like,
oh boy,
you're just mad because I shot a deer. And I'm like, I'm like, buddy, you shot the dumbest deer in the woods. Right. You literally shot a deer that ran to us. It literally stood there at 15 yards. It let us pick up the bipod, turn it in her direction, get lined up. And because I was prepping for a 70 yard shot. And so I had it zoomed in a little bit, the scope zoomed in, and then it was too close and he couldn't see it in the scope. And then, so I had to turn it back down and he could finally find it. And then he was leaning around a tree to do it. And that doe stood there and looked at us the entire time. Then he shot it and then it fell over dead. But I was like, buddy, you shot a deer. That deer might be deaf and blind. We don't know yet. We don't know yet.
But you take it.
Yeah, but we'll take it, right? And so this morning we drove to a neighboring town, dropped it off at the processor. We're getting breakfast sausage. We're getting ground. We're getting the back straps and belly loins. And so I involved him with all of that stuff. And
That's huge.
Yeah. And I think it was just kind of like, maybe it was the first time for him. And maybe he was like, didn't know how to act because I'm in it all the time.
Right.
And so I don't know if any of that played a role, but then again, I'm overanalyzing all of it.
I think too, once he gets older and he sees the work more and more, how much work it takes. And then as the deer get bigger and older and more mature and probably see, I want to say more rewarding, but something along that lines. But I think getting them involved is huge. Mm-hmm. My son's deer last year, because he's big on family time and whatnot, and he likes to try and do what he can to help. And so I made sure when we processed it too, like vacuum sealing it, I made sure I put his name on it for everything that came from his deer. So he kind of, as we're taking stuff out of the freezer to cook it, he kind of gets that sense of pride too of like he's contributing, even though he's as young as he is. So,
Yeah. And so I just hope that he sticks with it. I asked him, hey, do you want to go hunting again sometime? He's like, yeah, I want to go hunting during shotgun season. I'm like, well, we might be able to. I don't know. I got to go check the laws for youth as far as shotguns are concerned and what now that he's filled his youth tag, what he can and can't do. I got to do a little research on that. But, you know, he's still asking to go hunting 24 hours after he shot the deer. So that's, I take that as a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
Before we move forward in this episode, though, I do want to send a shout out to some of the partners here at the Nine Finger Chronicles. And thank you for supporting this year and for brands like Wasp and Vortex and Code Blue and even Reveal, multiple years now of partnership. So, and I'm just going to keep this short. If you are looking for a badass broadhead, mechanical or fixed blade, majority of their heads are still manufactured in the United States by Americans with grade A material, go check out wasparchery.com. I have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. Read into their VIP warranty. You break it, you buy it, and You break it, you bust it. It somehow gets caught in a wood chipper. You send in the pieces to them. They will try to fix it. If they can't fix it, they will replace it. No charge to you. So VortexOptics.com. Check out their Ranger HD 3000 laser range finding binoculars. I used it this past weekend. It's a badass optic. VortexOptics.com. Code Blue Sense. Do you use mock scrapes at all?
A little bit.
Okay. So, full disclosure here, my mock scrapes were dead the last month. Since I put them up, honestly, this, like, I don't know what it was. Last 2 years, they were hitting them immediately. But over the course of the last, like, 5 days, bucks have been checking mock scrapes very aggressively right now. And so I'm getting a lot of trail camera pictures. The mock scrape kit that I use is the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit from Code Blue Sense. They also have a complete lineup of real and synthetic deer lures or deer attractants and scents, urines. They have scent elimination products like detergents and wipes and sprays, body washes and deodorants. So go check out codebluesense.com, discount code NFC20. Next on the list is Reveal trail cameras. Like I said, I try to pair my mock scrapes with a trail camera. And I'll say this, over the course of the last 5 days, 3 to 5 days, there has been a big uptick in deer movement on my properties, and I'm documenting that through my Reveal cell cam. So go check out the new Ultra at tacticam.com/cameras and read up on all the functionality there. Okay. And then last but not least, my company, fullsneakgear.com. If you like t-shirts with deer on them, I don't even know how to properly like market my own company. I just say dumb shit. Like, if you like t-shirts with deer on them, then buy this t-shirt. Right. So just go to fullsneakgear.com and check it out. All right. I'm going to ask you a question about Michigan.
Oh boy.
Okay. Cause you're from Michigan.
Yeah.
And I've talked to, of all the places that I have talked with people, if I was to chart all of my guests, there would be a high number from Michigan, high number from Pennsylvania, high number from Wisconsin. That's just because that's where a majority of the hunters are in the U.S., right?
Oh, for sure.
Sprinkled out everywhere, though, but the majority of people on this podcast have been in those three states. And there seems to be a theme with some of the people that I'm talking to in Michigan, and that is, we are excited to go hunting this year in a different state, right? They still go hunt their state. They do their thing in their state, but they're the most excited to go somewhere else to hunt, right? And we had a little bit of a conversation before we hit record about you going to Kansas this year, and you said you were extremely excited to go on that hunt. Where does that, like, what I said, does that line up with what your thoughts are?
Yeah, I love hunting Michigan. I do love hunting the high pressure. Kansas just opens up that door for a higher volume of bigger deer.
Yeah.
And I just happened to know a landowner out there that I'm able to get some permission on. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a once every few years opportunity between the kids and, yeah. you know, as you know, kids and the fundings and all the things. So, mm-hmm. It's cheaper than an elk hunt,
mm-hmm.
but, it's just something that I want to get a break away a little bit from Michigan as far as trying to, change it up a little bit. Now it's going to be a rifle hunt instead of a bow hunt. Archery is my passion, but, I also haven't gun hunted since 2013. Last time mm-hmm. was actually the last time I was in Kansas. So, yeah.
Step away from Michigan and you go into these other environments, especially when you're like, you said you're an hour north of Detroit, right?
About 2 hours. Yeah.
Okay. Two hours north. That's a drive. Right. And what I mean by that is that's an easy drive. 2 hours right. to go to hunt. That's an easy drive. So you have this giant population center of during the deer season. I take it everybody is doing the same thing that you are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
What's it like then going to a state like Kansas that has limited entries for everything that they do, has a chance to see a true giant whitetail bigger than, let's say, Michigan would? Like, what's it like showing up there and hunting that hunt and then knowing that you got to go back to Michigan and it's not even close to what that is? What's that like?
I just changed my mindset as far as my expectations. I mean, I just have to have realistic expectations. You can't shoot 140s where 140s don't live. Not saying they aren't in Michigan by any means, but, your opportunity of shooting 140, 150 inch or bigger buck is much better in Kansas than it is in the areas I typically get a chance to hunt.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What's the mindset or the expectation that you put on yourself every year? Like right now, when does Michigan open?
October 1st. So.
Okay. October 1st. What mindset and expectations do you have starting October 1st for this season based off of all the other seasons that you've hunted Michigan? What's your expectations?
In the areas I pretty much hunt, predominantly a 2.5-year-old a lot of times is the most dominant deer in the area. I try to find 1 to 2 target bucks that then become essentially my goal. Yeah. If a stranger shows up out of nowhere, that's bigger, I will not hesitate to take an opportunity. If I have an opportunity, I just try and take it. But I do usually try to find 1 to 2 target bucks, and that's, I kind of go all in on those.
Yeah. Okay. So recently, there's been a lot of talk about, there's been people who have been talking about introducing and new rules and regulations to states like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Ohio was the actual specific example where we need to copy Iowa and their rules and regulations in order to have the best possible deer hunting that there is. Okay. But I think a lot of times what goes unnoticed is the amount of people who hunt Iowa, the lack of habitat in Iowa, and the amount of people in general and number of hunters per capita in a state like Michigan compared to Iowa. Do you think that if there was a magic wand sprinkled its angel dust, its fairy dust over... We're just sprinkling angel dust all over Michigan and everybody's getting hyped up for the season. Do you think that would change Michigan for the better or not?
Without knowing every single state's different regulations. And in Michigan, we have 650,000-700,000 hunters. The number is huge, it's declining a little bit, but you're going to get a different answer from every single person.
Yeah.
Whether it's shooting more does, whether it's a one buck stay, whether it's an APR, whether it's a combination of it all, changing season dates, crossbow legislation. I mean, there's so many things that would go into what everybody would want to see for any changes. Do I think some more exclusivity and some changes could be made to improve quality of deer as far as bigger bucks? Yeah. But at the same point in time, it's not my place to try and tell somebody, you know, it's a 2-buck state, and if they want to go out and shoot a spike or something smaller with their first tag, or their second tag, as long as it's legal, it's
yeah,
not my place to really say either. I just have more of an opinion than and the guy sitting next to me might not want those types of changes either.
Yeah. And here's where I am conflicted on some of my thought process about what, you know, everybody sitting here going, hunting is getting too easy. I'm actually fairly critical about crossbows in archery season, right? I made a post that went viral and it pissed everybody off. Every crossbow hunter in America, I think, saw it and got pissed off at it with that short little clip, right?
Right.
But the thing that I'm conflicted about is, what is the goal? Is the goal for everybody to shoot bigger antlered deer? Or is the goal for the landscape to carry a higher capacity of deer so hunters get more opportunity to shoot deer, right? Because I feel like in a state like Michigan, you know, because Michigan's a two buck state, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and Iowa is actually a 2-buck state. You get one archery tag and you get one firearm tag. If you're a landowner, you get a third landowner's tag. Okay. So how many bucks, if you filled all of your buck tags in Michigan, how many could you fill in a year?
The two.
Just two. All right. So actually, do landowners in Michigan get an extra tag?
No. No, not an additional buck tag.
Not an additional buck tag.
You can get a lot of doe tags, but
right. Okay.
As far as buck tags.
From the tag allocation standpoint, that's, you know, that we're the same here, but it's the people, right? So the volume of what's going on there. And so I don't think that is, because there's more hunters on the landscape, they're going to kill more deer than a state like Iowa, which has probably half of the cover that.
Northern Michigan, especially. Northern Michigan has huge blocks of timber.
Exactly.
Huge blocks.
Exactly. So I'm trying to sit here and say, what is the best for hunters? If you're a public, or if you're a public land hunter, I would assume that you would want more opportunities at deer. If you're a private guy and you're the only person hunting, or a very small select people can hunt your property, you're probably going to want bigger antler size.
Right.
And so here then is the DNR trying to make two specific groups of people happy. Now in Iowa, we have the private land guy is the majority by far.
Right.
So I'm guessing a lot of rules and regulations revolve around that type of guy. Now you take that to a state like, I don't know, South Dakota, which has on the western side of the state has an absolute shit ton of public land. Right. There's other states that have a shit ton of public land, and maybe even some do on the east side of the country as well. But there's less compared to the west. Nebraska has a ton of walk-in and public ground in certain spots. And so this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to sit here and just envision what is the goal? What is the best solution to everybody's problems? And I don't think there is one, to be honest.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
What is natural? When you read natural flavors on a label, most people don't realize it's often not real food at all. Those hidden ingredients quietly work against how your body feels and functions over time. That's why Just Ingredients uses only real food ingredients, so you know exactly what you're putting in your body. Stop guessing. Start knowing at justingredients.us.
I think Michigan's got such a strong heritage that of people just wanting to shoot bucks, don't want to shoot does, and then you have other hunters that are more on the want the QDM side, as far as we want bigger bucks, and therefore try and balance out the buck to doe ratio by taking out more does. It's really hard to say for Michigan, in all honesty.
Because you guys have a healthy doe population, correct?
Oh, yes.
You got a lot of does.
We have a lot of does, and we really don't have bad genetics. We just don't get to the age structure.
To where
they pop. What I personally see. Yeah. Trying to get them to that 4.5 and older. And the big woods can get really difficult to hunt too, because it's such vast timber that and with the pressure, somebody a half mile down the road might spook a buck that you're trying to hunt, and you've been patterning, and all of a sudden somebody else moves in even a quarter, you know, a few hundred yards away, and it shifts that deer's pattern, and then you got to go and try and find them again. And when they have thousands upon thousands of acres of timber to move in, it makes it more difficult as far as trying to find oaks and where they're feeding, bedding, and whatnot.
Yeah. And I take it that with constant pressure, when you're trying to relocate a deer, it becomes extremely difficult because they've been bumped so many times. Is it easier in your experience hunting those types of environments that a deer just goes nocturnal and just holds extremely tight to a safe space?
Yeah, they'll hold. A lot of times, if they get bumped a lot, especially the older bucks, they'll just hunker down and go nocturnal, and it'll take a lot more to. But if they find a safe spot, you almost have to. I mean, you have to get right in on top of them to really get them to move. Years ago, we used to do deer drives, and there'd be deer that wouldn't even get up and move until you were literally 10 feet away from them, 15 feet away from them. If they saw you coming, they just hunker right down until you were right on top of them. They knew if they sat still long enough, or thought that if you sat still long enough, that you might not see them.
Yeah. Man, that's crazy. Meanwhile, in Iowa, we got does running up to people and just sitting there waiting to be shot, right? And I've noticed Like when I hunted Michigan that one time, just the behavior of the deer herd, like you slow a truck down on the road, gone, yeah. Right? You walk into the timber and you bump a deer. They don't stand up and look at you. They stand up and go, yep. Right? Even in the tree. Yeah, skittish. Exactly. Even, and out west too. There's something about a Western whitetail that I've noticed that is like a mule deer will stand up and will look at you for a moment, try to identify you. Whitetails, they just,
they're gone.
And so I'm guessing it is just, they're that way. And I'm talking about the Michigan deer herd again. They're that way just because of hunting pressure.
Yeah.
Just consistent hunting pressure all the time. All the time.
They see humans as a nonstop predator.
Exactly.
Like out west, they have the coyotes and the wolves or cougar, yeah, mountain lions, anything. So it's just that nonstop predator and survival mode aspect.
Talk to me about how you approach high pressured public land.
Sometimes it's go deep. Sometimes it's not go deep. And I think you've mentioned it before, and I think it's a good way to describe it is in Michigan, it doesn't even need to be public, but it's just pressured deer in general. Like there's pressured and not pressured deer, more or less, as far as, because you might have parcels of private that have 4 to 6 guys trying to hunt on it too. Of a 40 acre piece with 6 guys, that's as much or more pressure than some of the public pieces you find. It's just a nonstop scout and try and stay on fresh sign, preseason scouting and then in season scouting on your way in, on your way out. Going to completely different parcels, maybe 20 miles away and see what's going on there and try and stay up on things.
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine how I would react if I had to come and hunt some of that pressure. Like if you're a Michigan native and you grew up in that environment, you're going to just think like, oh, that's normal, dude. That's just some normal. That's right. How I hunt. Meanwhile, I'm in an area where there's less hunters. There's no public, right? So you have to have permission to hunt on these pieces, which means that more than likely the hunters per acre is greater in that area as opposed to here. And I'm just envisioning right now going and sitting multiple days in a row and not seeing a deer and what would happen and like what my mind state would be like. I would probably get extremely frustrated.
It's gotta grind. Gotta grind.
And so has there ever been a time when, as far as you or maybe guys you know growing up, that it just became overwhelming to them and they're just like, dude, fuck this. Like I'm done with this because it just sucks. Like I get in there, I do my due diligence, I do my scouting, I do all this, and then a guy walks in on me. Yeah. Or all this stuff, and then someone does something stupid, or maybe they think they're doing the right thing too, and then they don't see deer, right?
Right.
Talk to us about your buddies, and if or even you. Oh, has there been a throw in the towel moment?
Yeah, a lot of them have thrown in the towel, unless they have even private land. If they have private land access, they might hunt the first 2 days of gun season and that's it. When it comes to bow hunting, a lot of them have given up. They just lose interest. And they just feel dejected, I guess it may be one of the best ways to put it.
And so then coming full circle here, the one place that you turn your frustration to when you're when you're angry or pissed that this deer thing isn't working out for you, you look at the DNR or do you look at like, oh my God, like the DNR can maybe fix rules and regulations, but the DNR can't fix culture.
No.
Right.
Nope.
The DNR can't fix what people actually shoot, unless it is an antler point restriction rule or regulation, right? Right. So they can force people to shoot bigger bucks or older age class bucks. And from the sounds of it, the guys who I've talked to who live in the APR zones up in northern Michigan, it sucked because the guys who just wanted their buck didn't. It sucked for the first couple years, maybe, but then they saw the result and then they're like, okay, well, maybe this APR thing is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. They went through a little bit of turmoil up that way. And then I think they started to see the results and started to get that age structure.
Yeah.
Even if instead of shooting a year and a half old 8 point, you know, that could have a lot of potential. Now they started to lay off on those and start to see 3.5, 4.5 year old deer on a more consistent basis.
Yeah. But that's because they're forced to.
Right.
Right. So what happens if the DNR says to Michigan statewide APR?
Oh, you make half the hunters happy and half of them pissed off. I don't think there's a right answer. You know,
So Michigan's a 2-buck state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is one archery and one firearm, or can both of them be firearm?
Both of them could be firearm.
Okay. So I could go out, shoot a forky, and then the next day go out and shoot a forky with my rifle during the rifle season?
The second one's got to have 4 or more on one side.
Okay. So there is a statewide APR on the second tag.
On the second tag.
Is that for archery too?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. All right. That's interesting. That's interesting.
So you could go out and shoot a 4 point today and then go out and shoot a year and a half old 8 point the next day and have 2 year-and-a-half old deer that meet all the requirements as far as the second tag.
Second tag. When did that rule come into place?
Oh, it's been a long time. For as long as I can remember, to be honest.
Yeah.
Now they have changed the regulations as far as what that second tag can be used for a doe in certain areas. There's a whole lot of changes that have taken place, and you almost have to reread the rule book every single year, as far as some of the changes that have been made.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about when you're up in a tree stand or a saddle or however you're hunting, whether it's bow season or firearm season, what tells me that it's a successful year for you? And I don't want you to talk about the trigger pulls or the arrow launches. I want you to talk about everything before that. Like when you are in the tree stand and you're seeing deer moving around, what constitutes as a good hunt or a good week or a rut or a good season just from visual?
If I can at least lay my eyes on one of those target bucks at least once.
And you're saying a 2-year-old.
I try to hold out for 3.5, but there's been years that 2.5-year-olds, like I said, has been the most dominant deer. Last year, I shot like 115, 116 inch 2.5-year-old 8 point. I thought he was 3.5, and then he'd come back at 2.5.
Yeah.
And I just, if I can at least get an opportunity at him, or lay my eyes on them. If I screw it up from there, then that's on me. But if I at least put myself in that position to get an opportunity at them, that to me is a win.
Yeah. So what happens? Let me ask you this question. Are you the guy do you run a lot of trail cameras?
Not a ton.
Not a ton, but do you use that trail camera data to identify your shooter deer for the year?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So even with trail camera data, you're still not seeing the three-year-olds that you hope to see every year.
Yeah. I got a couple small pieces of private, and then out on the public, I don't put a ton of cameras out on the public just because of theft and people screwing with everything. They can't leave anybody else's stuff alone.
Okay. So if there were more three-year-olds running around, you would probably shoot more three-year-olds, obviously, right? But it sounds to me like you're going after the biggest antlered deer that there is available in the areas that you hunt.
Yeah, that or does. I'll take freezer queens all day long.
Yeah, and let me ask you a devil's advocate question here. What if someone said to you, well, you want to see a three-year-old, pass a two-year-old? What if someone said that to you? What's your response to them?
Last year, I thought I'd tell a three-year-old. Ended up being 2.5. He was, but as far as the 2.5 to 3.5, and then you say, oh, well, if I let it go, the neighbor's going to shoot it. A lot of the areas I hunt, I have never had what I can confirm is the same deer at 1.5 to 2.5 or 2.5 to 3.5 year old on trail camera.
So there's a lot of shifting that goes around.
A lot of shifting. So as far as to say, if I let him go, maybe I'll see him again next year. And the one piece in 30 years of hunting it has never happened. That I've been able to confirm.
And that is a very reasonable expectation of the reality of the pressure that's put on that herd, deer herd, right? When you have deer that are growing up and then pressure is basically just bouncing deer around all year. Or every hunting season, right? And then they go to a property and they get pushed, and they go to a property and they get bumped, and then they go to another property. And next thing you know, you got a buck that you had all summer long living on your property is never seen again.
Right.
Maybe he's shot. Maybe the pressure got to him.
He might get shot 5 miles down the road here.
Exactly. Which again, I can give you hundreds, but probably 50 examples in 20 years of deer in Iowa that just live on a farm their entire life, 4 years, 5 years old, right? This new farm that I got, that I picked up 4 years ago, there, I swear to God, there's a 10 year old doe on that farm. You know what I mean? Just like, she is the doe group. Like there's a doe group there. They've lived there their entire life. This doe has probably given birth to, nine or 18 or however, whatever, fawns.
12 to 15, probably at least.
Exactly. And so that's just another interesting observation that like the range of what, we have versus what you have.
Right. Those are the doughs I got to take out. Oh, I love taking that. Old properties that we used to have, when I'd see them big matriarchal doughs, if they busted me during bow season and it was opening day gun season, it was like, oh, see it's ya. On. You got to go. Yeah.
Welcome to my freezer, sweetie.
Yep. The playing field has been leveled.
Exactly.
And you are going down.
Exactly. I did that one time, but she got me. And so she came upwind of me and I don't know why, but she was upwind of me and she starts snorting. She's slowly working her way towards me and then doing a head bob, not looking at me. And then she's slowly looking into this pasture and I drew back on her and I don't know if she saw me bust or another deer saw me draw back. And that one deer turned around and ran. And then she just went like looking into the field and she did one of these, like look straight up at me. And I let the arrow go and her head stayed the same, but she brought her back end around And the arrow, she didn't duck the arrow. She just moved her body like a, I don't know, like a semi-truck jackknifing. But she did it to her body like that. I missed her, you know, I missed her. If I would have hit her, it would have been in the ass or something
right,
like that.
Right.
And I missed her. And then she ran towards me, got downwind of me, and then blew for 40 more minutes. Right. And so it's like, I might need a claymore for her.
Yeah. Yeah. If she blows, she goes. That's
exactly.
The
exactly. So I'm just, it's interesting for me because I always put myself in an empathetic position where I try to relate to hunters, right? I try to put myself in a position where, and I don't think I've ever been in that position. Right. And so that's why I like talking to you. And it makes me realize, like, here in certain states, not just Iowa, but other states where there's less hunters, how good it actually is.
Right. Right.
Compared to the Michigans and Pennsylvanias of the world.
And you
unless you have a big chunk and you manage it.
Right. Like, you don't have a ton of cover, but you also have the food. Like, in our those huge timber parcels up north, those deer just don't also have the food to then go along with helping with antler growth and poor soil. They're eating a lot of pines and, you know, in the wintertime, it's brutal on them just to try. There's only so many acorns to go around.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Do you think it would be helpful if Michigan split those two deer tags up and made one of them archery during archery season and one of them firearm tag during firearm season? Because I'm guessing still more deer get shot with firearms than with archery equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that would help or not. I've thought oftentimes a second buck tag, if it was an earn a buck. But then again, you know, there are some areas just with lower deer densities that it would make that harder or more difficult. Or if you made the second tag like an obscene price. Made the second, if you want to get a second buck tag, your first one's $20 for a resident. If your second tag was, say, 120, would that get people to want to shoot more does, or and maybe, well, if I can only shoot one buck or it's going to cost me $120, would that, I don't know. I don't think there is a right answer, but you just try and play, you know, I played scenarios over my head. What would help to try and get a little bit more age structure?
How much is a Michigan resident deer tag?
We have to buy our base license, which is like 11, and then the regular tags, $20.
Yeah.
So it's not outrageous, but.
No. And I always thought about this, right? Like, you have all these residents bitching about non-residents coming into their states, whether that's a Western hunt or, you know, Iowa, we do the same thing here. But I'm always, I look at our current, my buck tag this year was $28.50. All right. I look at that and I go, well, number one, I look at that because I am a serious deer hunter. I look at that price and go, I'll pay that times three. Like, right. I would pay $100 as a resident for that.
Right.
But I, like, not everybody's as serious as I am. And I always think, like, residents of any state do have it really easy from a financial standpoint. And so the idea pops into my head, if why don't residents pay more money for their deer tags?
Right.
And then I can remember reading a comment when Iowa went from like $12.50 at one point. I think it, like, when I started hunting, it was $12.50 for my buck tag or something like that, way a long time ago. And then someone, they raised it to like $24 or something like that. I can't remember what it was.
It was a big jump.
It was a big jump. And people were losing their mind over over a $10 for the bet, literally the best, and for the best buck tag in the country,
right?
For residents. And so I'm, you know, like I'm sitting here trying to, I'm wondering why, like why, if you're like to hunt, wouldn't you want your state, wouldn't you want to pay more money to make your state a better place to hunt than to haggle about the price of a deer tag? I don't know. I don't know. That's something that I'd like to gather more information on and talk to people. Like, do you think where you stand as a Michigan resident, do you think that that's a fair price? Is it too low? Is it too high?
I think it's fair. You're paying 28 for some of the best hunting in the country, and we're paying 20 for, not saying we don't have good hunting, but
yeah,
it's the volume of quality deer is not nearly as big
right
here. So I'd say it's fair.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'd like to see something. They're talking about increasing. There's been proposals or it's been thrown out there that they might increase the price, and that does have some hunters. I don't know what it's going to go up to. I haven't followed it super close, because I'm going to pay it no matter what, I guess.
Yeah.
But a lot what of people that, are upset about it.
What do you think that means? Like, obviously it takes more money to manage the state wildlife through hunting license, you know, like just off hunting licenses and tags and the profit that is made, the revenue that's generated from tags and licenses for all species, whether that's predators, pheasants, whatever, fishing license, things like right. that. Like, obviously that means more money for the state, but inflation is inflation in every aspect.
Correct. Wages right. will go up for the DNR officers to be out there. There's
it's part of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so things are going to get more expensive as we all, you know, gas prices are going to go up. Seed goes up.
Yep.
Yeah. Chainsaw prices go up. Tractor prices go up, yep. like all that stuff. So, I'm just trying to, I'm just sitting here trying to figure all of that out in my head some days. And I'm just like, nobody really knows the right answer for any of these things. And, I think what it all comes down to is if you can just like stop thinking about that during the hunting season and go out and have as much fun as possible, I think we win.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your goal this year?
My goal this year is to try and get, my 8-year-old, his second deer. That is in Michigan. That's kind of that's what I'm all in on. Hopefully I can make that happen. And then Kansas in December will be my big goal for myself. So.
Gotcha. So deer for the kid.
Deer for the kid.
Kansas deer for you.
Yep.
And then how many does do you plan on shooting this year?
Depends on how many give me an opportunity.
Yeah, there you go.
I try to take a minimum of one doe for every buck we take, you know, every buck yeah. I harvest, minimum. Okay. Try and do my best to help balance things out. But if I can get him his buck and then go out, and then I'll try and take a doe or two here in Michigan.
Perfect. Well, a little bit of a BS session today.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking time out of your day to hop on. And
of course, man.
I don't know if we solved any of the world's problems today, but we had fun talking about
it. Yeah, for sure. I don't think anybody, you can try and come up with the best solution for everybody, and they'll still tell you it's wrong nowadays.
That's right.
So
that's right. That's a fact. There's one thing we do know.
Yeah.
Right. That's a fact. My friend, thank you very much for taking time out of your day. Episode 1001, dude.
Congratulations, Dan.
Hey, if I make it to episode 2000 in 10 more years, will you be on episode 2001?
I'd be honored, sir.
All right, dude. Let's do it. 2001. See you in 10 years.
Good luck and be safe out there.
Yeah, you too, man.
See ya.
TaxAct filing software and live tax experts can help small businesses easily knock out their taxes. Actually, our experts can help you find deductions and credits for any sized business. Itty-bitty businesses, medium-sized, really big mid-sized small businesses, companies with zero employees, and mom-and-pop conglomerates. Yep, our tax experts can help all of them. TaxAct. Let's get them over with.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.